VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to The Game, the day after the transfer deadline day special. This is the football podcast from The Times. You can also check out the ultimate transfer guide at thetimes.co.uk with the latest news on every club's dealings. I'm Max Rushton, in for Gab. I've got a really good feeling about this podcast. You may remember me from an historic The Times, The Game podcast some time ago, I forget when, the highlight of which was waiting to see if Matt Hughes, who was on the phone, would make it to the Arsenal training ground before the pod finished. He did, and apologies for ruining that if you were going to go and find it and listen back. Today, Pellegrini out, Pep in. He must be hoping they don't win the quadruple. No fairy tale for John Terry. He's off somewhere. Stoke and Everton play a lot of money for people. We'll explain who they are. And Saida Berahino didn't go anywhere, but still got a lot of airtime. Oliver Kay is on the phone. How are you, Oliver?
I'm very good, thank you.
Where are you?
I'm at my home in a secret location in the hills of West Yorkshire.
Oh, I see. You can't divulge exactly where you are because of the haters, is that?
Yeah, exactly. The haters and the lovers. The lovers are more of a worry.
Yeah, absolutely. And are you looking out on the dales?
I'm looking out into my back garden actually, which is a bit Dalish, but it's a lovely day. I, as a matter of routine, I did actually say I'm very well. I've actually got a cold, and that explains why I'm going to be sounding a bit bunged up.
Do you have a lozenge or anything to help you with that?
My lovely wife has just made me some kind of remedy, which she said she's not going to tell me what's in it, but she asked whether I was driving anywhere before driving anywhere this morning, so I suspect there's a large amount of brandy, so maybe I'll get quite giddy as the thing goes.
Brilliant.
But it's honey, there's ginger, it's very nice.
Oh, well, thank you.
Does any good, I don't know.
Thank you to Mrs. K from all the listeners to The Game, and Oliver will be high as a kite by the end. James Scowcroft is in the studio. Hello, James.
Hello.
Life good with you?
Very good, thank you. Yourself?
I'm pleased. Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. And basically the nicest man, the greatest man in the history of the world. The beautiful, almost as beautiful as Gylfi Sigurdsson, Julien Laurent is here. Hello, Julien.
Bonjour, Max.
It's lovely to see you.
You too.
You're French?
Yes.
So at some point I'll ask you to explain why Stephen Fletcher's gone to Marseille.
I'll try.
So this is being sold as the big transfer deadline day special, but we should probably start with the fact that Pep Guardiola is going to Manchester City, because that seems more interesting than the transfers. Julien, right decision?
Yes, I mean, it was the worst kept secret in football, to be fair, and probably the history of the game as well. It's obviously an incredible thing, I think, for Manchester City, for the club, the fans, the players, the squads, to be able to have someone like that. The manager, arguably the best manager at the moment, you know, in football, one of the best ever, for sure, as well. And I think he's going to be great. I think he's, you know, whether he wins or not, I think Pep Guardiola brings far much more than just success or trophies. I think it's a complete different philosophy. It's something quite unique, I believe, from the players who've been coached by him. And I think it's going to be just a great experience for how long it lasts, whether that's 3 years or a bit more. For now, he's signed for 3 years like he did with Bayern Munich, for example. So he might not last more than that. But I think he's going to be an incredible journey for the club and everybody associated to the club for as long as he's there.
James, you're nodding.
Totally agree with Max. I think in Manchester City's history, the last 8 years, it's probably their biggest signing. Certainly the most poignant signing, I think. And I think he will, you know, Pellegrini's a good man and he's done okay as a manager. Mancini was okay. But I think now they have a top world-class manager, which they haven't had in their eight-year history. And I think he'll take them on to the next level, really. If you look at the players, Aguero, Yaya Toure, I just think he'll get more out of them. I think, first of all, he'll get more respect because of where he's come from, what he's done in the game, the players he's managed. You know, he's proven manager for better players than what Man City have got. And I think as a player, you'd always look at that, and you'd always respect that he's, you know, coached the Messis and the superstars in the game, really. And I think if they get some good transfers in as well, which I'm sure they'll go for as well, I think it could be ominous for English football in the next 5 years.
Oliver Kay.
At risk of agreeing and making it all a bit of a love-in, I think he's absolutely fantastic. I know people say, oh, he hasn't done it in the Premier League yet. I think he's absolute genius. I think City with Pellegrini are the strongest team in the Premier League, or should be the strongest team in the Premier League. But they've been coasting. They've been on autopilot. You could say they've been underperforming for the last 5 years. I know they've won trophies, but I think they could have done a lot more. And Guardiola strikes me, and has always struck me, as the guy who can take them out of that comfort zone, who can challenge them, who can take them to new heights and get them playing not just for 15 minutes a game and being good enough to win most weeks, but being utterly dominant. And I really think with that squad that he will inherit, and with, you know, one or two sensible additions, I really do think it's scary for the rest of the Premier League. I think it's wonderful for Manchester City. I think it's wonderful, the idea of having a Guardiola-led Manchester City, but it's I think it'd be worrying for the rest of the Premier League. I don't know how others will respond.
For very Premier League-centric types, what type of manager is Pep? What formation does he play? What style of football is it?
It's a very attractive offensive football, for sure. For example, the last game with Bayern Munich on Sunday, he played with five forwards, which I believe is the only one right now in the world to be able to
just
play
the five.
With. Just the five. And I know he was at home against Hoffenheim, so, you know, when bigger tests come, he won't play with so many forwards. But I think he shows you what kind of manager he is. And they won 2-0, but they could have probably won 10 easily. Lewandowski scored two on Sunday. He's offensive. It's not just about the tiki-taka, because however great football Barcelona produced under Pep, his Bayern Munich at the moment plays a completely different way. Yes, they have a lot of possession, but it's not the same sort of possession than Barcelona had under Pep in those years.
Has he been a success at Bayern Munich?
I think he's been an okay success, because he's won the league with the best squad in Germany.
But me and you could win the league with Bayern Munich.
Probably. Max.
What a great
Max,
managerial
Max
team.
Second. Max will finish
Scowcroft
second.
Scowcroft and Laurent.
Max will finish that. Second. But it's all about the Champions League. And if he doesn't win the Champions League this year, which we will find out soon, I think it would be seen as it was good. But because I think, again, he changed the whole philosophy, the whole mentality and everything there. But in terms of success,
he changed the philosophy. They won the treble the season before he came in. They won the European Cup. He's got nowhere near winning the European Cup. He's been absolutely destroyed in the semi-final by his philosophy and tiki-taka, whatever you want to call it. So as
I agree. I agree with you. I just think it's a unique experience, whether that brings you the Champions League or not. And if in 3 years at Bayern Munich he doesn't win it, then it would be a disappointment, I think, for the club and for him as well. I just think the Guardiola experience is far much bigger than just winning the Champions League or just winning trophies.
Because the problem he's going to find in the Premier League, there's a lot of teams at the moment, Watford's, your Crystal Palace, your Stoke, who are having a lot of success playing counter-attacking football. And they are at their best when they're playing against these tiki-taka that are expansive. One fullback is high and wide and almost out of the ground because he's so, and then the other forward, blah, blah, blah. And they're leaving spaces at the back. And these clubs are doing so well at the moment by doing that. So it'd be different. You know, I don't think in Germany they really have the same quality mid-table, lower down. Certainly in Spain they haven't. So it'd be interesting to see if his style actually does work in the Premier League.
Oliver?
I think the thing with Guardiola is, as Julian said, he will adapt. I mean, he's not somebody who is so wedded to a philosophy that, you know, he hasn't gone to Bayern and played the same sort of 4-3-3, false nine type of 4-6-0 formation that he played at Barcelona. But also, you know, when people say, I know what Jamie's saying about the point about them having fallen well short in the Champions League. Bayern won the Champions League in 2013 under Heynckes, and you know that was a brilliant team. That was the most successful year in their history. But that was also a year when Real Madrid were in a state of implosion under Mourinho in his final season there. When Guardiola had left Barcelona and they were in a state of flux. And it's hard to say. I mean, it's hard to make a convincing case that Bayern have gone backwards under Guardiola. I mean, I know you can look at the Champions League results and say they have, but I think he's taken a situation where it was
the
impossible.
English football
to,
teams were stronger then, Ollie, than what they were now.
I don't know.
Chelsea and Manchester United were a lot stronger then than what they are now.
Manchester United are, yeah. Manchester United were, but I don't think the overall level has gone up, you know, greatly over that since 2012-13. I think that was part of the period when English teams were underperforming in Europe as well.
I thought he was naive last year against Barcelona in the semi, trying to take him on at the...
He'll always be naive in a certain respect, because his ideology is I will get our players to play football against you and dominate you, and we will, you know, and we will destroy you. And
there's a lot of self-belief, doesn't he?
There is a lot of self-belief.
What about comparisons to Jurgen Klopp? I mean, Klopp sort of said, don't expect an easy ride. As you were sort of mentioning, James, the Premier League is a difficult league to play in. But clearly, he's inheriting a much better squad than Jurgen Klopp has.
All day long.
Yeah.
But again, it's...
Jurgen Klopp
hasn't got to win the league. That's not his expectation. You know, I think Guardiola... And I think probably the worst thing that would happen if Man City did win the league this year, maybe if they had success in the Champions League, similar to Bayern Munich, and all of a sudden... You know, where does he take it? I'm sure he'll be fantastic for Man City. He has a fantastic aura about him. It's interesting because he did a coaching conference not so long ago, and there's a lot of people went trying to look into this, you know, his training philosophies, his ideas he had. And for all he did for 45 minutes was talk about a work ethic, which you need. If you're going to be any kind of coach, you need to get a work ethic into your players. And I think if you look at Man City over the years, even the two, the couple of league titles they've won, Manchester United threw it away, realistically, one year, and City won. Liverpool should have won it, but Man City come through. If he can put a work ethic into the current side and then the add players, I think they'll be very hard to catch.
How much sympathy do we have for Pellegrini?
Pellegrini's known from the moment he arrived that he wasn't first choice, that he was almost keeping the seat warm for Guardiola if they could get him. And he's accepted that. And I think in some ways that has been apparent, because, I mean, I don't feel like he's ever had a really, really strong grip on a City team. I used the phrase autopilot earlier, and I agree with what Tim was saying. They're not a team who ever sort of outrun or outwork or look more organised than the opposition. They very often win because they've got better players. I don't know how much, you know, I would say Pellegrini has been, you know, a modest success in the Premier League, because he's won a title with the by far, in my opinion, by far the strongest squad over the last 3 years. He might win a second in three seasons this season, but let's see how he does in the Champions League. I've always been disappointed by City in the Champions League and in the big matches against top opposition.
And what happens to Manchester City this season? Are they now all under pressure to impress Guardiola, or do they implode because they know Pellegrini's not going to be there? Julien Laurent.
I think it's tricky. I really think it's tricky to announce halfway through the season who your next manager is going to be and that your current manager is out of the door. And I don't know what kind of effect that can have. And, you know, do the players think like, do Pellegrini start thinking like, well, sod it, you know, I don't care now anymore because I'm leaving in June. I'm going to find a new club with a new project where people will believe in me more than they did at City, because clearly, and I agree with Ollie what he said, he never really felt that it was his club, you know, that it was the bench, that was his team and everything, because he knew that Pep would come at some point. So, and it could have been earlier as well, by the way. So there's a bit of that. Maybe Pellegrini would think like, well, I don't care anymore. Maybe the players would think, well, he's not going to be there next season, so... You know, yeah, let's try to win the league, but we're not here to impress the manager. I'm just not sure what kind of dynamic that would bring.
James?
Okay, let me ask a question. Do you expect the same effect at Bayern?
Yeah.
Because I don't.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, and I think
look at what Bayern did under Heynckes.
Yeah, but that was later in the season to start with.
Mm. No, It was January.
It was January, but I don't know. I don't know. I saw Thomas Müller's quote the other day, or Manuel Neuer in L'Equipe on Sunday, saying like, well, you know, this is not good news that Pep is leaving. It's not, I'm just not sure the timing. I just don't think whether it works after or not. I'm just not sure if the timing is right. And also if there was not a better way to do it.
I think there's a couple of ways to look at it, isn't there? There could be less pressure now on the players, on Pep. You know, there's not that intensity while he's off, so... And is that one sort of thinking, well, there'll probably be somebody else now, I've got to prove myself again. There's nothing worse as a player than a new manager coming in and starting all over again. You have to, whether you're an established player or you're a fringe player, all of a sudden the slate is wiped clean and you have to roll your sleeves up and give it a good go. So I think it'll work at either team. The interesting bit will be if they draw each other in a Champions League. I think that'd be fascinating. That'd be a great press conference.
Also, yeah, well, fascinating for Pep as well. He must be. Is Pep sitting there hoping that Manchester City, you know, implode as well? Because he doesn't want them to. They can win everything, can't they?
He might not want a repeat of the situation he inherited at Munich, where he took over a team that had just won the quadruple or whatever it was. But it's my point would be that you would have those concerns about City's players. You'd have that concern about City's squad because I think, you know, up to now, I think they've underperformed and they haven't really needed much excuse to sort of ease off a bit in games and in general. And you look at Bayern Munich and you think, well, I don't see those players, their players, falling into that trap. And I think in England, and maybe it's sort of English football culture, or maybe it's the media narrative around it, maybe it becomes more of an excuse. Maybe the sort of super concentration of focus of the German players is greater. But, you know, maybe City's players will prove me wrong and win the treble or something. Quadruple again, that word, quadruple.
Yeah, and also my point earlier about what happened with Heynckes and Guardiola. Guardiola didn't have a job at the time. Guardiola now will prepare next season at City while still being at Bayern Munich. You can't sign Robert Lewandowski by starting negotiating in June when your contract at City has started. If you want to sign Lewandowski or anyone else of that calibre, you need to start now almost, which means that Guardiola will already be thinking about who I'm going to put in my squad at Manchester City next season, while the current season, where he's at Bayern Munich, is still 6 months or 5 months away from the end. And I just don't know how that works. How can Guardiola prepare next season with City already now? Because that's what you have to do. You have to plan ahead, you know, so early. And also focus on the end of the season with, you know, with Bayern Munich.
What would happen if they drew each other in the Champions League and someone like Philipp Lahm injured Sergio Aguero and he was out for 9 months? How's he going to feel afterwards? You've killed me there. That's
He'll just pick the softest 11. He'll play 11 strikers. When he said, do we know who's going to get the Bayern job, Julian?
Pellegrini.
Ancelotti, they've announced Ancelotti as well. But again, Ancelotti is out of a job, so he's got plenty of time to think about next season, to get his squad, the players he wants out, the players he wants in, which is obviously far more easy than someone like Pep, who will have basically two jobs on his hand.
God, it's a merry-go-round you want to be on, isn't it? You're just that top club merry-go-round manager where you get 200 grand a week and, you know, just wander about between the few of them. You've written a good... It's that easy, by the way. You've written a good piece, Oliver, about what this means for Manchester United. Because they, you know, their fans will be looking at Guardiola coming over there, looking at how miserable LVG is and panicking over whether they should get Mourinho or not.
Yeah, I mean, I would say this, you know, among Manchester United fans, that there are those who think they should be rushing after Mourinho, and there are those who think that almost anyone but Mourinho, apart from Moyes, perhaps. If you look at the situation now, with Guardiola sort of coming in across the city, I mean, maybe that raises the stakes, maybe that sort of forces United fans and, more importantly, the board to sort of look over what reservations they might have had about Mourinho. I mean, I've always thought, on principle almost, that United should be looking for a different type of manager to Mourinho. Not because of the sort of controversy, but because of because he doesn't play Manchester United style football in the same way that Van Gaal doesn't play Manchester United style football, and because he doesn't, you know, go with youth. He's a different type of manager. So I've always had that reservation about Mourinho and United, and I still have it. I think the last 3 years have only reinforced that. But United's circumstances have changed, haven't they? They are now desperate, or I suspect they will be, unless Van Gaal can turn things around dramatically between now and May.
I think there's Manchester United and Chelsea both looking for someone. I think, will Spurs fans be terrified that Pochettino will be lured by one of those two sides?
I think they should. Because I think Pochettino will be, although again he's a different style of manager than Pep, for example. But, you know, in terms of youth, exactly what Oli was just saying. In terms of, you know, the way he plays, although it's not so much an attacking football like United have been used to it. It's more, you know, at times a.
I think this attacking kind of
pressing.
That was 10 years ago. The game's moved on now. It's 4-2-3-1. It's a lot of get behind the ball, we'll have possession in our own half, having 4-4-2 and wingers that are going to attack down one flank and get crosses in and that kind of attacking. I think that's gone. I think we're entering a new era now where it's more of a tactical game. It's probably a little bit more physical now. and who can cancel each other out and have that little bit of a gem in the final third.
Oliver, what's incredible, though, sorry, is that Manchester United haven't bought anyone in January, which I find that baffling considering the flows they have in their squad. And it's quite obvious, I think Oli surely would agree with me, that it's quite obvious to see that they have big holes in their, you know, teams in what they need to finish, you know, top four for sure, or even higher than that. And for them, for a club like United, to just don't bring anyone in such a crucial, I think, transfer window could have been for the club, I just find that baffling.
Oliver, can I press you to start with? Who do you think will be the manager of Manchester United and Chelsea next season?
I mean, I think the easy answer on United is perhaps Mourinho. I think, you know, if you were saying bookmaker's favourite, but I know there are certain reservations within the club, and it's just a case of whether they end up feeling that they have to go with him despite those reservations. I suspect they would, because I don't think football philosophy is particularly high on the Glazers' list of priorities for a new manager. And Chelsea, I would say perhaps, well, one of three: Conte, Allegri, and Simeone.
Simeone for Chelsea and Mourinho for United.
I think Giggs will get the United job.
You think Giggs will?
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Giggs versus Guardiola's. I mean, that's fascinating.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Think of the first Manchester derby. That is pressure on Giggs, isn't it? We should mention someone who won't be at Chelsea next season. That's John Terry, because we haven't had a podcast since that happened. Oliver, I think I saw you tweeting that you were very surprised about the timing of that coming out.
Less surprised by the timing. More, I mean, I suppose you know, you look at it from John Terry's point of view, and it's quite clear that, you know, the timing was quite tactical. I think he had a meeting last week and wanted it out there, either to force the club's hand or to attract you know, other offers and interest from elsewhere. I mean, I suspect his priority, I'm told his priority, is to stay at Chelsea and that he really wants to. But it does remind me a lot of the Frank Lampard situation 3 years ago, where Chelsea were between managers, interim manager, you could say every Chelsea manager is an interim manager. But, they made a judgment call on Lampard in December 2012, saying, we don't want you, when they didn't even know who the manager was going to be the next season. That's what they've done again with Terry. In the Lampard case, they ended up rowing back and offering him a contract, and he stayed for another year, and that worked out well. And you could have argued that, you know, they should have kept him another year after that. But with Terry, is there scope for a U-turn again? Yes, I suspect there is. But speaking to people close to Terry, I think he feels it's the end.
Paul Hayward's written a piece in the Telegraph, if we're allowed to mention them.
No.
So, no, of course. So he's written somewhere, just in the ether, it just appeared, saying that this is it's a political decision as much as a footballing decision, that finally John Terry's lost his political power to decide who the manager of Chelsea Football Club is.
What they've got to be careful of, Chelsea, like John Terry's going to come to an end at some stage, is if you look at the characters that they've had in the dressing room, Cech, Lampard, Drogba, you know, Terry being a big one, if Terry goes, that has gone. I don't really see the leaders in the Chelsea dressing room. And I think certainly they've missed those characters. And I think if you look at Ferguson, what he did at United, I don't think he got rid of any of the class of 92. It was down to them when they wanted to retire, because he saw the worth that they could provide. You know, just keeping a lid on everything in the change room. If there was any, you know, big-time Charlies or something, the John Terrys or the Lampards could put a lid on all of that.
Who was the biggest time Charlie you ever played with?
I'll come back to me on that.
Frank Yallop.
Frank Yallop was a very, very good, very funny man.
Was he?
Who's a very good coach manager now in America.
Okay. So it wasn't Frank.
No,
Craig wasn't Frank. Forrest.
Craig Forrest was a charming bloke, very good goalkeeper. And I think he's in America now, or Canada.
Really struggling.
Have you got your Ipswich Book of Canadians?
My Bailey. Listen, there's one thing. I did a PhD, actually, on Canadian footballers in the English football.
At Ipswich.
Yeah, at Ipswich. Well, Carlo Corazin I include as well. We're 25 minutes into our Deadline Day podcast, so let's mention Deadline Day. It was apparently it was a quiet window, but the Premier League still spent £175 million. No one in the top eight signed anyone on Transfer Deadline Day. Stoke made the most expensive signing, Porto's Gianelli Imbula, £18.3 million. I confess to not being an expert. He's not Canadian, so why would I know about
exactly.
him?
Exactly.
Julien, I'm staring at you.
How do you know about Frank Yallop and these?
I was just scrolling. No, I was just scrolling through my Panini sticker albums in my head and trying to work out who played with you at that time. And I was pretty proud that I came up with two. Were they before your time?
Yeah, that was when Ipswich and Cambridge used to go head-to-head, wasn't it?
It did. Those were the days. Now we're talking.
Cambridge actually come to Portman Road.
2-1, Steve Claridge.
Yeah, went top of the league.
Yeah, I was there. I thought we'd get to the Premier League that year. We got to the playoffs, and this is very interesting.
Who scored the first goal for Cambridge?
No. Terrace got the second. Who got the first?
I thought he was a big
Dion,
fan.
Dion, John Taylor?
No.
Cheatham, Philpott?
No.
Richard
How can
Wilkins?
You remember that?
Neil Heaney.
The guy's at the game as well.
God. You're a fake fan of Cambridge.
Gary Rowett.
You're a fake fan.
Gary Rowett, was it?
Yeah.
See, that's not bad, is it? I'll pull that eventually. Yes, I'm a plastic.
Yeah,
I'm
after
a,
like
I
10
am,
names.
I'm a plastic fan. when we got drawn against Manchester United in the FA, and I play Saturday, so I don't go to too many games, the amount of people calling me a glory hunter. And you're like, if you're going to be a glory hunter, you've got to be so stupid to pick Cambridge United, really. I mean, there are just more teams with more glory. Anyway, less interestingly, Gianelli Imbula. Julien, tell me all about him.
Yes, he's French, so obviously I know him well.
Is there a Frenchman you don't know?
No. But the first thing, the crazy thing is that he's had six terrible months at Porto, who bought him from Marseille in the summer for £15 million. And yet, after six terrible months, Stoke City still paid an extra £3.2 million to Porto to buy him. So more than when he was actually good, when Porto signed him, he had a good season with Marseille under Marcelo Bielsa. They signed him, and then Porto still managed to sell him for more money than they bought him after six dreadful months. I just find this incredible. So I hope for Stoke City and for their fans, for everybody at the club, that they have signed the Imbula from Marseille, not the Imbula from Porto. And even the Imbula from Marseille was a very good box-to-box player. He's got a big engine. I think he's very good technically for a midfielder. But he had that tendency of losing the ball in key part of the pitch, in key moments in games.
It's a real trait you want.
I'm just being honest with Stoke fans. It's just that he still has a lot to learn and a lot to improve. And I just think it's a lot of money for a player like him.
Staggering amount of money. You mentioned Marseille there. Why don't we mention Stephen Fletcher going from Sunderland? I'm looking at that going, what are Sunderland doing? Surely Sunderland need Stephen Fletcher, don't they?
Really?
Don't you think?
What? They need him for what?
Well, because they goals. Score some, yeah? He doesn't score that many, but he's a good centre forward. And they don't have that many. I get Defoe's doing okay, but I think it was strange for Sunderland to lose one of their centre forwards.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not so sure about Sunderland, why they loaned him, but for Marseille, they tried every single striker in Europe, that kind of striker in Europe. I mean, Scowcroft was next on the list.
Really?
It was just, if Fletcher said no, Scowcroft would be at Marseille right now. You know, but it's just, so Fletcher, I don't know, his first game would be the classic, the derby between Marseille and PSG on Sunday at the Velodrome.
As it's a derby when they're 600 miles apart.
It's still a derby because it's a hell of a game. That's why.
Fletcher versus Ibrahimovic.
Real Madrid, Barcelona is a derby, but you know they're not in the same city, so it happens sometimes. Anyway, I'm just not sure. I don't know. It's going to be crazy to see him, you know, in Marseille, and I hope for Marseille he does well because they need someone else up front. Behind, he's not first choice. Michy Batshuayi, the very promising young Belgian striker international, he's the number one, so he's there as a backup sort of. So we see what he does there. But, I mean, it's a great life for him. Trust me, Sunderland compared to Marseille, it's just, woo! He just thought I won the lottery, man.
A former teammate of mine went to Marseille. Chris Makin. Remember Chris Makin?
I remember Chris Makin, yeah.
Yeah, he went to Marseille for a year. So it's the best year of his life.
Oh, it's just crazy. And
Bandol.
Just
Bandol
that, is? Yeah, Bandol is lovely. Aix-en-Provence, all of that. So just for that, I mean, I think Fletcher did right for him and his family.
Who would like to comment on Umar Niasse from Lokomotiv Moscow, who's gone to Everton for £13.5 million? Does anybody have any intel on this chap?
Ollie, it's your turn.
Oh, God. Well, I can't claim to be to have been watching Lokomotiv Moscow every week, particularly over Christmas as well. The league shuts down, so I've not seen him much recently, you know what I mean? A lot of these big money signings come from you know, players who've been imported to Russia and Ukraine, and a lot of them don't do very well in England. And I know Everton aren't in a situation where they had to do anything desperately, so I'm guessing they have thought it through. They've looked at it. They've looked at the market and think it's a good deal. The noises coming out of Everton were very positive. There's a suggestion that, you know, he's somebody who could step up and into Lukaku's shoes if Lukaku is sold. Not a suggestion from within the club, by the way, over the summer. But it's it's one of those where you look at it and think, well, you could criticise Newcastle for spending £12 million on Jonjo Shelvey, but it's more of a risk, perhaps, to buy someone like Niasse from Lokomotiv Moscow. Obviously, it would seem that he has a higher upside and greater potential, but I guess there's also greater potential for failure.
The last player that Everton signed from Lokomotiv Moscow was Bilal Tedinov, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he looked good. He looked great with Lokomotiv, and he never looked that good for Everton. So I'm just not sure. I wouldn't have gone back to Lokomotiv Moscow for spending that much money as well.
And Bilal Tedinov, you can't generalize like that.
No, but Bilal Tedinov was quite expensive. Well, you know, in a way, it was quite expensive at the time he signed. So it's tricky, I think.
James, Ollie mentioned Newcastle there. That's quite a sensible window, isn't it?
I think Shelvey and Townsend are two good signings. They've had too many foreign players in the team over the years. I think even Steve McLaren has admitted that. They've got two good standard Premier League players. You know, I think Townsend's a good buy at £12 million. He's an England international, still, you know, not terribly old either. Can be exciting on his day. I think he'll be.
He'll cut back? Shoots left
foot. He shoots.
And I think John Jones Shelvey is a good signing for them as well. So I think two very sensible signings for Newcastle.
They tried to get Berahino and they offered, as far as we understand, was it £21 million cash for Berahino? West Brom not doing anything. How do we feel about, I sort of feel Saido Berahino, yes, he made a mistake the last time he sent that tweet out. But actually, is this fair on him, or should we feel no sympathy for Saido Berahino? Oliver.
I would say, generally speaking, it's fair to keep a player against his wishes, maybe for one window and just see how it goes. But Berahino, you know, has had an awfully frustrating time since then. He's not, you know, it seems like Tony Pulis doesn't want to pick him because of these reservations about his attitude and so on. And I assumed they would sell him. It didn't seem like there was much point in keeping him unless there's going to be an effort to reintegrate him into the team. And I just wonder that, you know, it might be slightly counterproductive to keep him against his wishes again, unless, but obviously they needed to be able to replace him if they were going to sell him, and maybe they didn't leave themselves enough time to do that.
Given how close the Premier League is this season, and given it's potentially the one chance for Leicester and perhaps even Spurs to win it, and a decent chance for Arsenal to win it, are you surprised that none of those teams really did anything? James?
Yes and no. I think all teams would have looked, but I think it's very hard to get players in January, you know, top players that are going to improve your side. You know, can you convince teams to sell your best player in January, halfway through a season? No. And I think now with the game going the way it is, you know, so many teams, especially in the Premier League and next year's TV deal, everybody's cash rich. Everyone's got so much money that they don't really need to sell. So if you are going to buy players, you've got to pay, you know, through the roof for them.
Are you cash rich?
No.
Julian?
I mean, I think Leicester with Amartey, who looked like a quite good midfielder from Copenhagen, and Gray as well, who's a very exciting prospect from Birmingham, I think that was okay. They tried hard for a striker as well. And, you know, I think they got a lot of offers rejected. Again, you know, in a lot of clubs. The latest was Mbaye Nyong, who AC Milan accepted the offer from Leicester for £16 million. And the player didn't want to go there. So I think they tried hard, probably harder than Spurs. And I'm a bit surprised at Spurs, especially with Vertonghen's injury as well. They didn't try to just strengthen the squad a bit. And offensively as well, if something happened to Harry Kane, I think, you know, they're not going to be in trouble, but it would be a huge blow. And just think that if you have the chance of, especially like you said, when they're in such a good position in the league, I just thought they would have tried to buy someone, but clearly not.
At the bottom of the Premier League, or near the bottom, Afobe and Grabban to Bournemouth. So that's $16 million in total. Then Norwich got Naismith. They got Patrick Bamford in on loan as well. So I'm pleased for Bamford because he looked so good at Middlesbrough last year. And then it's all got a bit sad for him this year at Palace, isn't it? And he's a smart player.
Yeah, like I say, he did a fantastic season last year. And he had a nightmare at Crystal Palace, let's be honest. I saw him several times for the games he did play. His body language was poor, his work rate was poor. So to get another chance in the Premier League with the club, will be interesting to see how he does, really. So I think Naismith's a good signing for Norwich. Lewis Grabham's an interesting one. He had a good spell, didn't he, at Bournemouth previously. He hasn't quite worked out at Norwich, former teammate of mine at Crystal Palace, but he's going back. Eddie Howe knows him well. And Benik Afobe, great chance for him.
It's a lot of money spent by Bournemouth. Mm. And I think he's good. I think it's a great story, but they've been able to, you know, spend quite a lot of money.
And all them spending money, and Remy Gard didn't get any of the players that he wanted. He wasn't given any money. I mean, Villa are just planning for the Championship now.
I love him. I love him so much, and he's had such a hard time. He's just
Why has he done it? I mean, surely it's a strange decision, wasn't it?
For him to go.
Yeah.
He always wanted to come here, and I think he knew that it was going to be difficult. I just don't think he thought it would be that hard, but he knew it would be difficult. But he just wanted to take the challenge, you know, on the challenge. And I think he deserves credit for that, and I think he's worked really hard. I think they've improved, you know. I think even in terms of the way the organization, and I think he's done some very good things. But the squad is limited, and he hasn't been able to strengthen it because no one wanted to go there. It's as sad as that.
Speaking of managers who are finding it hard, Gary Neville is finding it hard, isn't he? Why are you laughing, James?
I saw a clip the other day, Gary Mike Bassett Neville, which was very, in Spanish, used to see it. It's absolutely hilarious. It's a very tough gig for Gary Neville, but he is finding it very hard.
I mean, sort of surprised. Imagine he might have picked up one win by now.
I think he's got into it thinking, I will only benefit from this and it'll be a wonderful experience. I really hope it does work out for him still, but I don't think he's helped himself by saying, this is not really where I want to be. And this, if he was a Valencia fan, you wouldn't be too happy with that, would he? I don't think he's going to stay too far past this season. Does he come back to Sky Sports and tell every manager what they're doing wrong now? I think it'll be a little bit harder for him. So I think so far it's been an absolute disaster for him.
Could you imagine him with a touchscreen going, actually, it's harder than you think. Every time. He said in a press conference, he said, look, I've been a journalist, I understand it. And actually, TalkSport yesterday were talking about that, saying, well, he's been a journalist, but not in the way that I had to report on Peter Brazolda's lamppost. You know, that's journalism, Gary.
And he's never been a manager. Why did he think that he could do a good job there? I don't understand. I'm not a fan at all. I've never been a big fan of it as a player and as everything he did since. How come the guy thought that he could go to Valencia and that he was a manager? He was never a manager. He's hardly a coach. He coaches England now and again, like for 3 days, every 3 months or something like that. It's just crazy. It was crazy to appoint him. It was crazy for him to think that he could go there and do a good job. And I'm actually glad he's not winning anything, any single game, anything. Even Gijón beat them, at home at the Mestalla, because he doesn't deserve to be there. He shouldn't be there in the first place.
Did he wrong you in a past
life?
No,
he didn't. I'm just so annoyed by that.
This is like when Kevin Costner finds out that Christian Slater is. Are you his brother an illegitimate father?
He's just. I don't think he deserved that job, and I'm glad he's not doing well. That's all. Because the guy's never a manager. That's all.
Oliver, any thoughts on Gino?
Ollie is a big fan, though, so he's different.
I am a big fan of Gary Neville as a person. I like his punditry. I've always thought. I mean, I liked him as a player. I always thought he would make a good coach manager, and I still do think that. But I just thought when I heard that, I mean, a lot of things have come out over the previous couple of years, really, about him turning down various jobs, feeling that, no, that's not the right job. You know, goodish championship jobs. And then that one comes up. And to me, that looked like it looked like a hospital pass. I could not see it working out. I know a lot of people thought, oh, this is great for England, this is great for Gary Neville. I think it was a big risk in terms of his reputation as a manager. And I don't think we should judge him as a manager on the basis of what he does in a country where he doesn't speak the language. I just think it was just, you know, a daft appointment and an uncharacteristically daft decision by him to go for it. And I know he will think, well, what's the worst that can happen? It's a great learning experience. But, you know, it doesn't do a great deal for his credibility as a manager in the long term.
He's gone backwards, Ollie, hasn't he?
I just don't think it's any kind of place to test him. If you had a Spanish player, you know, even one with a great reputation who hadn't managed before, who was just sort of parachuted into a big yet unstable Premier League club by an owner who didn't have great football knowledge yet knew this player through business. Say it was Carlos Puyol, say it was Michel Salgado, somebody like that, and they didn't speak the language. That would just seem ridiculous, wouldn't it? It would seem like an incredible gamble and incredibly unlikely to succeed. And if Gary Neville had gone into, I said this the other night, but if he'd gone to Derby County or Middlesbrough or one of those stable Championship clubs where you've got more flexibility, perhaps you've got more stability, you're more in your comfort zone, and the players are probably going to hang off your every word for the first few weeks, I think that you know, maybe we would see a different Gary Neville if he was coaching there. But I just don't understand really why he went to Valencia.
But do you think, Ollie, if he goes to a Championship side, which would be a fantastic grounding for him, and he would know a lot more than what he would know at Valencia, it then becomes impossible to get to the very top to become a Manchester United manager one day? If you look at the people that have played under Bruce, under Alex Ferguson, sorry, like your Steve Bruce, your Mark Hughes, it's because of the clubs they've managed, and they've done okay jobs wherever they go, but they haven't won something. They haven't. That's always going to attract the top manager and almost block the pathway up.
Mm. But then again, you know, serving an apprenticeship as an assistant, as Giggs is doing, is that going to work as the?
Well, Ryan Giggs' best opportunity to get the Manchester United job is to be assistant manager at Manchester United. If Ryan Giggs went to Derby, I think the chance of him getting the Manchester United job
it's perception, isn't it? Yeah. Once you're on one level, you're on one level. Whether it's the League Two level or the League One level, or like we mentioned before, that top merry-go-round. The thing about, you know, I think we all wish Gary Neville well, apart from Julien. But if he does finish with wins, naught. That there's something frankly hilarious about that, isn't it? Anybody have anything else to add before we all go home? And you're home already, Oliver, aren't you? How's the? Have you finished your magic potion?
It was very good. Yeah, Mrs. K's done a good job.
Is Mrs. K around to tell us what's in it or not?
No. She's gone off to work now.
She's gone to work. Okay. Well, thanks for your time, Mommy. I hope you get better.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
James, thanks very much.
Pleasure.
Julien, I love you.
Merci. I love you too, mate.
That's it. Thanks to all the people on the panel today. Please press the subscribe button. I don't mind because I don't do this very often. Gab will be back in the hot seat next week. You can get exclusive football highlights free as part of your subscription. £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. Goodbye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.